detail what we're going to do throughout the course of the month of June. And then we'll go on hiatus and, you know, resume back up again towards the end of the summer, as I want to finish the story of Shlomo. So I just wanted to welcome Ruthie, and he's back from Israel. We hope you had a wonderful trip. The story of Shlomo has in large measure been told. There's no question that building the Beit HaMikdash, as we know, was a big part of what he was destined to do. It's in his name, the peace that constitutes the Shalom, that constitutes the Shlomo. But as we noted, one could see already that even within that project, especially in conjunction with the 13-year building of his own, you know, palace, which is really quite something, and even more so, Kol Cheshek Shlomo, all of the what appear to be voluntary projects of scale, that there is a kind of propensity to grandiosity and to scale. And what I want to take a look at over the next 3 weeks, you know, as this plays itself out, tonight with sort of the back end of the story of Shlomo's, you know, basically very positive relationship with Hiram, the king of Tsur, but to highlight a couple of, I think, really important points, in then next week to look at Perek Yud, and then finally Perek Yud Aleph, which is substantively the end of Shlomo's story. That's what we have planned over the course of the next 3 weeks. And again, within this context, I just want to take a moment to emphasize, you know, just how you know, double-edged a sword it really is with Shlomo, that the good comes with some of the suboptimal, and vice versa. So again, the building of the Beis HaMikdash is just this perfect microcosm for this dialectic. On the one hand, you know, what could be more impressive? And on the other hand, the scale and the grandiosity is something that, you know, is nitan lebikoret. It's certainly subject to criticism. What does one do with v'hatznei aleches im elokecha? And it would be the, you know, one thing if, you know, we were talking about something that was completely exceptional. But we've already noted, you know, the scale of Shlomo's, you know, life in general. And so that's really going to become a major part of the story. Okay, so there are a couple of points that I want to highlight going forward. Before I do that, just allow me, Ellie joined us a minute ago. I just wanted to wish a big mazel tov to Ellie and to Miriam Berman on the birth of a grandson. Hopefully...
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Lachnisa Reviso Shal Avraham Avinu Bismano tomorrow. So Wilkinson was fond of quoting, you know, the oft placed magnet on the refrigerator, that if I knew grandchildren were this much fun, I would have done it first. But, you know, there are problems with that. There's structural problems, I should say. You know, it's hard to do that. So, okay, so what I'd like to do is to try to hit some highlights over the course of the next 35 minutes or so that I think are very significant. And what I subtitled this year is Shlomo, David, and Bas Paro. It seems like a very unusual mix, and I don't deny that it is, in fact, kind of an unusual mix. But you'll see that what the Navi is setting up here, almost undeniably, is this kind of a tension between David, who's obviously long since deceased, and Bas Paro. That's really what this second half of the ninth chapter is all about. And again, it's kind of fascinating to think about a conflict between somebody who's no longer alive and somebody who very much is, but that's actually really the story here. Let's begin, and then we'll kind of zoom out. So let's, like, you know, keep in perspective that fully 50% of Shlomo's Malchus is devoted to these massive building projects. So Chiram Melech Tzur Nisa Shlomo Batzei Arazim Uvatzei Viroshim Uvazahav L'chol Chavtzo Az Yitena Melech Shlomo L'chiram Esrim Ir Be'eretz HaGalil. So this, if it's to be taken literally, is just shocking. Right, Hiram is providing Shlomo with, you know, a very significant resource that Shlomo wouldn't otherwise have for his building projects, namely the cedars of Lebanon, the Arzi Halavanon, and the Broshim as well, in addition to no small amount of, you know, gold, which is, you know, necessary because Shlomo's style is, you know, very ornate. And the Navi says that in return, Shlomo gave Hiram 20 cities in Israel. So, you know, obviously, this raises some very serious questions. Like, the Abravanel, the Malbim, everybody is sort of like, you know, horrified. Shlomo is allowed to give away, you know, territory within Israel. We're not talking about, like, you know, land for peace. You know, Hiram is the threatening, you know, to invade or something like that. You know, we have interesting questions to ask, you know. But this is like land for gold. That seems outrageous. So you should just know there's a very rich literature here, you know, regarding what exactly Shlomo was doing. You know, some say, well, Hiram gave Shlomo 20 cities, so this was kind of like a land swap. That too is troubling. After all, it's not like, you know, you don't have to be the biggest acolyte of the Ramban to know that you can't, you know, be exactly like making land swaps. You can't say like, all right, we'll trade you 30 cities in Israel for 30 cities in you know, Uganda, and we'll call it a day. You know, not for logistical reasons either. There's something called Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, you know, the sanctity that, you know, should be inviolate. So that's like one approach. The other approach is like just, you know, total denial, saying, no, can't mean that. What it really means is that, you know, Hiram had, let's say, you know, first position on all of the produce from these cities, that Hiram could basically take whatever he wanted, and then they bring some evidence for that, which is that Hiram wasn't too satisfied with it. But this is a very important methodological consideration in Tanakh in general, which is that, okay, even if that's so, and the Malbim and the Abravanel insist that it is so, that there's just no way that Shlomo could possibly have given away land within Israel, like, anybody have any thoughts on why the Navi is portraying it that way? Like, it's one thing to say, all right, you know, fine. So maybe it's not true. Maybe it just means that he gave him the cities in terms of their GDP. But what's the, why then put it in such a misleading way and send everybody into like a frenzy? Yeah, Sam, go ahead.
Not that he didn't give away any land, the cities, but the products of Israel that are derived from those cities. I think I recall it was like oil, some wheats and grains that they needed in the Tyre and that area. It was a trade for products, not actually the land itself. I don't know why the Navi would put it that way, unless he's trying to, disparage Shlomo for whatever reason.
Okay, good. Yeah. So what you said materially is really what the...
Yeah.
Tarte Mashma, is what the Abravanel and the Malbim, you know, think in the end is really the truth, so to speak. But we still do have to contend. Yeah, go ahead, Ruthie. You wanted to say something. So why would the Navi put it that way?
So I don't know, but maybe it's a way for Shlomo to continue having an ongoing relationship with Hiram. Like, you know, just like, I don't know if it's the same Hiram or a different one who had given David supplies in the past as a gift, but maybe he wants to make sure, okay, I'll always have the material that I need. And, you know, I'm going to keep you happy and I'm going to give you this area to be comfortable in, so to speak. Like this way he's ensuring that, you know, he's going to have peace, which he wants. He wants that national peace and a relationship with all the other countries and powers. And maybe this way, like, he'll make sure that, you know, things are good between them.
Okay. So I appreciate it, you know, in terms of taking like a very much, you know, favorable position. I have to say, you know, from my point of view, which is just my point of view, the Malbim and the Abravanel seem to share it, is that like very little could justify, you know, giving away parts of Israel if there wasn't some active threat of war. And I certainly don't get the impression that Hiram was looking to, you know, invade, you know, his southern neighbor. You get the sense that there's a really good relationship there. So again, you know, it's hard to prove these things, but I think it has to be said that the Navi is at least opening up the door to, in terms of the presentation of Shlomo giving away these cities, is Shlomo having this kind of, you know, a hierarchy in terms of values and priorities that may have been somewhat amiss. That these raw materials were of such consequence to him. We don't have to guess about why, right? Because the building projects are, like, you know, inextricably linked to his own sense of self and legacy, that he's willing, whether, even if you just say it's the resources of 20 cities in Israel, but, you know, what we're talking about, and the Navi, I think, puts it this way, is, you know, Shlomo is like, you know, is really becoming almost obsessed with this kind of a project. And I think that is a problem. So that's point one for tonight. Yeah, Sam, go ahead. I think you wanted to make a follow-up point.
I had a question.
Sure.
Does the Navi mention what the 20 cities are, and is there any confirmation anywhere of what the Navi said by any other posek or any other historical artifact?
Okay, so it's actually really interesting, because let me just show you what happens here. The answer may be no, but it's probably not dispositive. So what happens is Vayetze Chiram Mitzor. So Chiram comes out from Tzor, right, way up north. Leroses Harim Hasher Nasam Lo Shlomo. Again, there you go. Right, it's the second time that the Navi is emphasizing that Shlomo is like giving him these cities. Vilo Yashru Beinav, but he doesn't like them. He doesn't think that they're good enough. Vayomer Meharim Ha'ele Hasher Nasatali Achi. Right, this is my brother. Right, this isn't an existential threat to the relationship, Ruthie, which I think is more evidence. It wasn't like, you know, he needed to do this. Vayikralahem Eretz Kavul Ad Hayom Hazeh. So he called it Kavul, and the Gemara has all kinds of interesting drashos about that. Kavul also means literally restraining elements, like handcuffs, or, you know, like that his, he felt that it was like a bit of an albatross, or whatever it is. And then there's all kinds of discussion that maybe Shlomo replaced them with some other, you know, cities, etc. So the point is that I think that this is already a pretty troubling indication. Okay, so the relationship, as we know, it continues, and it's a very productive one for Shlomo, just in terms of the resources that he's able to get. Vayishlach Chiram Lamelech Me'av Yasrim Kikar Zahav, huge amounts of gold. V'zed Dvar Hamas Asher Hela Hamelech Shlomo Livnosis Beis Hashem V'es Beiso V'es Hamilo. More on that in a second. V'eschomas Yerushalayim V'eschatzor Es Megiddo Es Gazer. Now here comes a critical pasuk, which is the second point for today. Paro Melech Mitzrayim Allah Vayokod Es Gezer Vayisrafa Ba'esh V'esaknani Ayoshev Ba'ir Harag V'itznash Luchim Levito Eshes Shlomo. So Paro comes up. Now we're getting going from the northern front to the southern front. So Tzor is obviously directly to Israel's north, to Shlomo's north. Paro is directly to Shlomo's south, right? So Paro comes up from the south into the land of Israel. So again, there seems to be this motif of sort of like a lack of vigilance around the borders, let's say. And he won't attack Shlomo, he won't attack the Jews, but he attacks some indigenous nations, and he just annihilates them. And he gives these cities as a dowry for his daughter, right, Bas Paro, who happens to be one of Shlomo's wives. Now, what I think is really interesting about this is a point of contrast. If you go just a few psukim down, a few lines down, and I'd like to discuss this point. Kol amanosar mina amori achiti aprizi achivi yivusi asher lo mibnei Yisrael hema bneihem asher nosar achareim ba'aretz. Those who were left behind in the land asher lo yachlu bnei Yisrael achrimam, that bnei Yisrael were not able, apparently, to destroy them. Vayalem Shlomo l'masoved ad hayom hazeh. So Shlomo basically forced them into indentured servitude. Ubimnei Yisrael, Onasan Shlomo Aved, Kihem Anshia Melchama Vavada Visara Vishalishav Visare Richbo Farashav. And Shlomo used them as a forced labor in aggregate, as opposed to Jews who he was simply unwilling to, you know, use for those positions. So I want to make an observation about this, which I think is really critical in setting the stage for like the ultimate confrontation of this chapter, which in a material sense sets up the back end of Shlomo's career. So what have we been told? We've been told that Paro is sort of ransacking cities in Israel, Canaanite cities to be sure, annihilating the population and giving the cities as a dowry to his daughter. fine. So that itself raises some questions. There's this, you know, famous story later on in Sefer Melachim, also in Sefer Yirmiyahu. It's a big part of the Tisha B'Av liturgy. Gemara in Tainis of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who was unwilling to allow Paro to use Israel as a thoroughfare to go to war against Bavel, the Cherev Lo Savor Baratzachem, that even a Cherev Shol Shalom, as it's referred to, that he wasn't going to war against the Jewish people, but nonetheless, like Yoshiyahu was very offended by the idea of Eretz Yisrael being used for somebody else's military adventures. Shlomo doesn't seem to do anything about it. Which you could just say, all right, you know, it's hard to know exactly what to make of that, but in conjunction with what we observed regarding the 20 cities, there's a little bit of a disturbing pattern there, where Shlomo doesn't seem to be particularly reactive to the integrity of the land of Israel. Now, again, I'm, you know, those who know me to know that I'm not one of these people who thinks that's the only value in the Torah. But, obviously the integrity of the land of Israel is to be taken very seriously, especially in light of, who exactly is doing this. This is Paro Melech Mitzrayim. You know, it's like a strange thing. But I think what's even, more consequential, if I could use that expression in this context, is that the Navi then immediately pivots to the fact and says, oh, well, Shlomo took all of these indigenous peoples that we weren't able to conquer and forced them into labor for his building projects. So I just have to wonder about that. We weren't able to or not willing to, right? The Torah says, hacharem ta'achrimem, we're supposed to utterly annihilate them. And it's true, there are different options. They can leave or they can accept the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. But, Paro, with an expeditionary force, it wasn't like, he could do this from a home base. He had to go take an army with him, which is a much more complex military enterprise, right? To go on any expedition is, have to secure his sort of supply lines and all these things. Paro apparently had no trouble doing it. And Shlomo, he can't. And yet, if he really can't, you would think that it'd be hard to explain how they ended up as indentured servants. So I think there are, more, exculpatory explanations that are possible. But you see where I'm getting at with this. It's sort of like there's this leitmotif that seems to be running through all of this, which is that Shlomo's really, really, really focused on these building projects. And 20 cities up in the north of Israel, next to Tzor, either giving them away or giving away their products, in return for securing his natural resources. All right, Paro, because he's not invested, so he's going to annihilate them, but we'll use them for our labor force. It raises questions. But I think these questions ultimately are almost inconsequential with respect to the last issue that we have to deal with, which is the Milo. Anybody happen to know, a little bit of an unfair question because it's out of left field, but anybody know what the Milo is? Goes back to the days of David, which is, at this point, we're going to sort of pivot to that. So what did David use the Milo for? It was basically the only undeveloped area in the proximity of Yerushalayim. When we talk about Yerushalayim, I'm obviously talking about what we would call today the old city, the walled city of Yerushalayim. So the Milo was an open space where there was a kibbutz of the Olei Regalim. And David HaMelech specifically left it as such, for people to be able to move through from all different places in Israel. And what we're about to look at is the fact that Shlomo actually gave it away to Bas Paro and let her develop it for her own complex houses, homes. So logistically speaking, making, you know, Aliyah LeRegel that much more complicated, in the interest of, you know, sort of making this gesture to Bas Paro, which seems, you know, really questionable. But it's a little bit more nuanced than that, so I just want to show the psukim inside so people can have an appreciation of what I mean by sort of Shlomo being caught between his sense of loyalty to his father, right? This would seem like a really significant betrayal of David HaMelech, where David specifically left this area open so that the Ole Regalim, all of the pilgrims, could move through and get to Yerushalayim. That was part of the design, it was part of the plan, and Shlomo's giving it away to Bas Paro. It was a very questionable marriage to begin with. So, you know, like, what is going on? Again, you know, let's take a look at the psukim. So, you have a little bit in Malachim, you have a little bit more in Divrei Hayamim as well. So, let's start from right here. So, Eila Sareya Nitzavim Asher Al Amlachal Yishlamo, 55 Meos Harodim Ba'am Osim Ba'amlacha, 550 officers over Shlomo's building projects. Ach Bas Paro Alsa Meir David Al Beisa, Asher Banala Az Bana Es Hamilo. So in Sefer Malachim, you don't get the full picture. I'll give you the Divrei Hayamim perspective in a second. So Bas Paro moves from where she was, Ir David, to the new home that Shlomo built her in the Milo. I'll skip down to Rashi for a second in explanation of this, and then I'll come back to Divrei Hayamim. So Rashi says that later on, Yeravam ben Nevat, who effectively led a rebellion against Shlomo, though it only really took effect into Shlomo's son's life, Rechavam, he was able to create a schism. So Yeravam attacked Shlomo for this. He says, you know, your father specifically left this area open so that the pilgrims could pass through, and, you know, you're giving it away to Bas Paro. It's a disgrace. V'yata baniso solasos angari lebas paro v'zo ach amur kan ach v'zo heva Shlomo. That this was really, right, an avla. This was a terrible act. Shabana la samilo kach shamati. Rashi quotes that as a tradition that he had from his, you know, rebbeim. What's interesting is in Divrei Hayamim, I think there's you get a little bit more of a nuanced perspective here. And I just wanted to read, with your permission, some of these psukim in Divrei Hayamim to try to show you that I really think it's a source of internal tension for Shlomo. So this is what we have in the 8th chapter of Divrei Hayamim Beis. Vehi miketz esrim shana asher bana Shlomo es beis Adonai ves beiso. So again, 20 years total. We know how it adds up. 7 years for the Beis HaMikdash, then 13 years for his own palace. I mean, like, Shlomo gets really, really into these building projects. V'ya'arim asher nasan chiram l'shlomo bana Shlomo osam. Vayoshev sham es b'nei Yisrael. So that's more grist for the mill, for those who think that it was really like a land swap. Like, here you have the cities that Shlomo got from Chiram, maybe in return for the 20 cities that Shlomo gave to Chiram. V'es bas paro hela Shlomo me'ir David, labayas asher banala, ki amar, because Shlomo said, presumably not to her, but to himself, lo seshe v'ishali b'veis David melech Yisrael ki kodesh hema, asher ba'a lehem aron Adonai, that Shlomo had these misgivings. He wanted to present it as if, like, you know, he's giving Bas Paro this, you know, great new home, but he had a lot of discomfort with the fact that she, you know, heretofore, you know, she'd been living in a place that David had consecrated, you know, basically to be the city of Hashem. Either the Aron had literally been there or had been its proximity. There's a lot of discussion about that in the Mepharshim. But clearly the sense that one gets from Divrei Hayamim is that Shlomo was looking to move her out because he felt awkward about having Bas Paro in a place that HaMelech had set aside for Kedushas HaShechina. So just to make this even more complicated than to sort of just summarize and distill, so Az Hela Shlomo Olos LaShem Al Mizbach HaShem Asher Bana Lifnei HaUlam Udvar Yom B'Yomo LaHalos Kevmitzvas Moshe. So they kept the Karban Tamid and then also Shabbosos Chadash and Moados Shalosh Pamim Bashana. So this is the Musaf and Kilchasam, Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, and all the holidays, of course. Vayamed Kemishpat David Aviv Es Machokes HaKohanim This is what we call the 24 Mishmaros Kahuna, the 24 different units of Kohanim, is basically a rotation of 24 different families of Kohanim. So, you know, you average it out basically twice a year, each family of Kohanim served in the Beis HaMikdash. That was something that David had been instrumental in establishing, building off of Moshe Rabbeinu's previous establishment. The chapter concludes with this note as well. Mitzvahs David. So in terms of the operations of the Beis HaMikdash, you know, Shlomo is operating it exactly the way that his father would have wanted it to be operated. And he even, right, moves out Bas Paro from the immediate vicinity of the Beis HaMikdash, let's say, because he feels strange about having her and what that marriage represents in a place that should be a place of, you know, like, you know, real sanctity. On the other hand, and this is just classic Shlomo. On the other hand, what does he do? So, like, of course, it's got to be a building project, right? What else? And in so doing, right, he definitely preserves the Mikdash, but in preserving the Mikdash, he kind of cuts off the Ole Regalim. Now, it may seem, in a relative sense, trivial. Like, the Mikdash is definitely more important than the staging area than of the Milah. But I would hasten to mention that this sets the groundwork for what Yeravam ben Nevat wouldn't just be critical of, but what was Yeravam's first major policy decision as the king, effectively, of the 10 northern tribes? What did he do? Right, he cut off the Ole Regalim from going to Yerushalayim. Right? And part of the populism that we'll get to in the fall of next year of Yeravam, part of his demagoguery, and he's like a really successful demagogue, is that they don't want us anyway. You remember what he did with the Milo. So, you know, these things may seem relatively less significant in the moment. They become much more significant later. But I can't emphasize enough. So this is like, you know, Shlomo in a nutshell. David, my father. How can I have her living, you know? You might ask the question, like, how could you be married to her? But, so the Gemara says maybe it wasn't a marriage. Maybe it was just the relationship of Znus. Gemara Nivamos makes that suggestion many times. But he loved her so much that we consider it like a marriage. There's a Gemara in Shabbos that supports it. But, okay, I mean, I don't know how exonerating that is. But, like, I don't know. You know, the relationship itself is you know, not exactly a great nachas to his father. But then to move her out of Ir David is kind of the positive instinct. And then to close off the Milo, that's the negative side. And it's all packaged together, right? So with Shlomo, it's always that double-edged sword. It's the great, you know, positive dimension of building the Beis HaMikdash. It's a wonderful thing. On the other hand, you know, 7 years of that, 13 years of building this palace, and it seems like Shlomo is really interested in securing these resources. It's almost like an addiction to this, building project. Do you give away 20 cities in Israel? You give away 20 cities in Israel. So that's concerning. And then again, like we said, not that, you know, I'm not a militant person in general. But the Torah says about the indigenous nations of Canaan, Hacharim Tachrimim, we're supposed to utterly destroy them. So if you'd ask me, you know, what's your, you know, preferred way of accomplishing this, I would say, try to talk them into getting, you know, keeping the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, and, you know, we can, you know, live and let live, which you know, the Rambam says is a definite halachic option, and is a preferred halachic option. The Rambam makes it very clear in Hilchos Melachim in Perek Vav. That's what we prefer than to go to, you know, a war of annihilation. But be that as it may, it's very hard for me to believe that Shlomo actually explored that possibility. What does Shlomo want to do instead? He wants to secure a labor force. Now, all right, you know, it's one thing if you say, you know, look, it's ones rachmana patre. We tried to conquer these people and we can, so we just going to have to live with that. But there's two, I think, very clear reasons that Navi is suggesting that we should be skeptical. Number one, Paro, with an expeditionary force, comes up and doesn't seem to have any trouble destroying them. Number one. And number two, Shlomo is able to impress them into forced servitude. So, you know, usually people agree to do that if they feel like they have no other option. So, I think that we are meant to wonder a little bit about Shlomo's commitment here to Eretz Yisrael, both in the geographic sense, Esrim Ir Be'eretz HaGalil, but also in the spiritual sense, that he seems to have been willing to leave over exactly what the Torah warned against in Sefer Dvarim, and Pentachtios Chali, right, that, you know, leaving these people over is going to be very deleterious over the long term, because eventually their influence, Litzidim Be'nechem, Litzidim Be'tzidechem, right, that the influence is a pernicious one, right, the culture is a nefarious one, and the impact is inescapable. So Shlomo's like not so rigorous about that. So I think it's a really complicated story. It's a really mixed story with him, because then once you get to Divrei Hayamim and you see the way that he's running the Beis Hamikdash, like if you are only focusing on the Beis Hamikdash and inwards, he is running that place exactly the way his father envisioned it running, down to the Mishmaros Kahuna, down to the Levim HaMishorim, the Levim who are singers, down to the Levim HaShoarim, who are guarding the gates, and never the twain shall meet, as we know, right? That, you know, they can't mix. It's a Misa B'dei Shamayim for a Levi who's a guard to sing, and vice versa. So the Beis HaMikdash, you know, he runs exactly as his father would have it run. So the impression that I think one gets after the ninth chapter, we'll have to see, you know, Malkas Shiva, which is chapter 10, and then chapter 11 is Zikna Shlomo, and, you know, all the wheels come off in the end. But you know, we'll have to keep these things in mind. But I think the impression that you get is somebody who's sincerely concerned about his father's legacy. I don't think there's any taking that away from Shlomo. But in a way, it's very narrowly applied. Right, like as it concerns the Beis Hamikdash, like literally the Beis Hamikdash, you know, you don't get the impression that Shlomo could have done any better. But the minute that you step outside of that, like to the Milo even, let alone what's going on in southern Israel with the Egyptians, what's going on in northern Israel with at minimum giving away the produce, but, you know, perhaps much more than that, one gets the impression that Shlomo is not really keeping faith with a lot of David's values. So again, you know, with Shlomo, the scale and the building projects and his investment in those really, really, really seem to color his judgment here, both with respect to the territorial integrity of Israel, as well as with respect to our interactions with the indigenous peoples of Canaan. Yeah, Sam, please go ahead. Thanks for waiting. Oh, Sam, I think you got to...
Yeah. Okay, can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Okay. So I just had a theory on Milo, and maybe it's a bit of a cynic in me, but here's what I think. Maybe Shlomo wanted to, in a very political and nice way, wanted to oust the Paro out of the area to make room for Queen of Sheba, Malkat Sheva, who is coming. You know, maybe he said, she's coming, that's going to be for her. So we have to get rid of, you know, Bas Paro, keep her happy, and Milo, and we'll welcome.
Right, okay.
That's just a theory, I don't know. Well, just speculating.
Okay, so let me stipulate that. Okay, so maybe he is looking to generate an opening. I mean, I'm not convinced of the point, but I want to... Just to explore this, I want to let me accept your premise. You know, whatever happened to Herzliya, Netanya, there's some really nice places up on the beach. He had to take the space that David thought was like integral in terms of you know, making sure logistically that the Ole Regalim could come into the city, this one undeveloped place in Yerushalayim, and to give that to her? That seems a little bit of a miscalculation. Or an undervaluing of the Ole Regalim.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I'm just saying it's plausible. I don't know if I'm convinced it's 100% either, but I think it's plausible knowing maybe what Shlomo's priorities are. And maybe not the Ole Regalim is not the biggest priority.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And so that's what I was trying to say before, is that Yerovam is really, really able to exploit that to great effect. Right. Because the sense that you get is like the building. It's the building. It's David's vision, the building. The building is done. All right, the Ole Regalim, it's really for them, right? Is it not? But, you know, Shlomo seems to have, you know, really become enamored of the building project, and a little bit disengaged, right, from the people. And I think even if you're right that he had some master plan, you know, he was beginning to be alienated from Bas Paro and all this, like, that was a very strange choice. Very strange choice.
It just sounds more like Shlomo. I don't know. It's plausible.
Okay, but even so, like, you know, so then that's something about Shlomo. So again, you know, we'll have to hold it up here in just a moment because I want to give people a chance to get to Mincha. But I think that you have to take the picture holistically with Shlomo. The Mikdash is a great achievement. There's no taking that away. The functionality of the Mikdash as David's blueprint is, you know, beyond question. At the same time, what one does really have to question is at what expense? Territorial integrity of Israel, nations of Canaan, the Milo. Shlomo seems to be paying a really, really, really high price everywhere outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So here you have this person who seems like caught between this image from the past, the Demosti Yakno Shalaviv, if I could use that expression, right? The image of his father, his father's vision, and not Ashes Potifar, but, right, you know, his own Mitzri, Mitzris, I guess I should say, this Bas Paro, who's, you know, sort of tempting him in a very different direction. And this tension, this struggle, I think, you know, Perek Tes is really just the tip of the iceberg. And when we get to Perek Yud Aleph, just 2 weeks from now, we're going to see, I don't have any word for it other than an implosion. It's basically just an implosion, where the tension can't hold anymore, and Shlomo just goes off, you know, off the rails. Okay, so sorry to end on a negative note, but God willing, over the course of the next 2 weeks, we're going to finish up the story of Shlomo. And we'll be positioned for the story of Rechavam and Yerovam, beginning of the fall season. Okay, everybody have a great night, and
thank you.
Thank you.
We will see everybody soon. Okay, bye-bye.